Ireland may be a small island on the edge of a continent, but our unique mix of animals and plants gives us a fascinating natural history. This series celebrates the animals that share our island, and we meet some of the people who know them best. I'm Colin Stavridge-Johnson, and this is Nature on One. West of the town of Belmullet in County Mayo lies the Mullet Peninsula. Now I'm standing right now by the jetty in the village of Blacksod, waiting for a boat that's going to take me to the Inishkea Islands, which lie a few miles off the west coast of the Mullet. Now October is the time when grey seals haul themselves ashore to give birth, and I'm hoping to witness the life of a grey seal colony in autumn, the trials and tribulations of giving birth on one of the remotest and windswept islands on our western seaboard. The young seals born here have to brave these cold autumnal Atlantic currents as they take to the water for the first time, and that's what I'm hoping to witness today. That pup's actually going to go into the water. There's a wave coming up. There's Gollum, he's in. He's straight away looking around. It's like he's thinking, what have I done? Now, travelling out to the islands with me today is Oliver O'Kyla, who's a scientist who works for the National Parks and Wildlife Service. Now, he's a seal expert, and he's a great knowledge of the wildlife of these islands.
Blacksod Pier and the slipway are very sheltered, but once you get out into the open, a couple of hundred yards on from here, you've got Achill Island and the sound between Achill and the mainland. And you've got very strong currents going in and out because the whole of Blacksod Bay floods and ebbs through that narrows there between here and Achill. So if we have a strong falling tide, then we'll have a bumpy ride getting out into the open sea.
Here goes now, opening up a bit. Oh, you can see the swell is coming around the corner.
Yeah.
That's a sign that it might get a little damp.
After a fairly smooth crossing, relative by west coast of Ireland standards, that wasn't bad. Just coming into the bay now on the south Inishkea. This is the south, isn't it?
Yeah, Inishkea Haas. As they say in Irish, yeah. Inishkea Haas.
And in front of us, this old abandoned village.
Scary.
And a load of geese taking off in front of us. Look at barnacle geese.
Yeah, barnacles, yeah.
Hundreds of them.
Yeah.
And turning into the sunlight. What a day. They give a real sense of wildness to a place. That sound, isn't it so evocative? And with all the ruined buildings, this island belongs to the wildlife now. The Inishkeas were abandoned in the 1930s, but there were once 200 people living here. Wasn't there once a whaling station here too?
Yes, that's right, yeah. Way back 100 years ago. And they employed islanders to go out on the vessels and hunt whales, but they also employed them when they towed the carcasses back ashore, and they had a small wooden pier built, and they would tie up the whales and then bring the line ashore and use a mechanical hawser to haul the whale ashore. And the islanders were involved in the processing of the whale meat and the blubber and all of that too.
Now, I've seen those pictures of them sort of standing atop these massive creatures with those big blades they have carving into them. And so I suppose it would have been, fin whales and humpbacks
Humpbacks, all baleen whales. Well, actually, they would have had some sperm whales as well.
And blue whales too. Blue whales, the biggest animal that's ever lived.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine them being hauled ashore here and now. It's such a peaceful, quiet place, because there's something about whaling. There's a violence about whaling, I think, and there's a violence about almost what you do with a carcass afterwards. It's their sheer size.
Yeah, yeah. When you think today of how many blue whales are left, you know, every blue whale that was taken, you know, and brought here, had an impact on a population scale. They're such long-lived animals, And you know, it takes so long to rear a young one, and for that to survive and everything else, the stakes are high in that. And yeah, it was a different time, you know. 100 years ago, there was a need for oil, and I think really the consequences for the islanders of whaling really wouldn't have been known at the time.
Of course,
you know,
yeah,
whaling.
Yeah.
You know,
well, the sea seems
they would
unlimited
have seen it as
then.
Fishing. You
yeah.
know, like whales, if you look back through the older material, the older literature and articles that were written and stuff, whales were seen as fish, and they were yeah. just another resource in the sea to be exploited. And as you know, fishing still goes on today, and fortunately in this part of the world anyway, whaling doesn't.
And I guess the sea seemed limitless, and I think many people still view it in that way.
Yeah.
They don't realise that it actually is finite. And they think, oh, well, there's always more fish in the sea. And we're only starting to realise, actually, no, there aren't.
No, no. The Universal Law of Compensation. I don't know if you ever read the book by Monk Gibbon. It's quite a nice book written, I think, in the last century. But he talks about the Universal Law of Compensation, that something is always paid for by something else. And that the same happens in the natural world, you know.
Going to make our way across the island to the coves and beaches on the far side, as that's usually where the seals haul up to give birth and rear their young. I hope there's still a few there waiting for us. Just the sound of the wind, the geese, and the distant sound of the seals. And that outline, the outline of the southern part of Achill Island, that steep cliffs and the mountains,
yeah.
Not a boat in sight.
I often feel like the profile of Achill like that, it's often like a sleeping dragon. You know, there's kind of the way the snout sticks out to the west, and then there's this big ridge on the skyline, like the back of a dragon or something, and it's just lying there in the sea, nice and calm. That's a beautiful sight.
Oh, fabulous sight, and the sun sort of coming from behind it, backlighting both it and the sea. And you can just hear the seals calling in the distance. It's the kind of sight that you'd like everyone to see. Everyone who's got to make a decision about the future of our countryside and our landscape, you'd love them all to be able to stand in a place like this. Like, this is what makes Ireland special, places like this. Okay, well, we've stopped about 300 yards or so from the beach, and Oliver's just having a scan around. There seem to be lots of seals. The tide is now pretty low, so most of the animals that are here are probably hauled out right now. So what we've got to do is to creep down into position without being seen or smelt. Lots of animals there.
Yeah,
aren't there?
Yeah, there's one or two that are only a couple of days old. There's certainly one there now. I'd say it's maybe 2 or 3 days old at most with the mother. And it's really quite nice to see them, because they're a little bit like a well-fed baby at, you know, in the early days. They're kind of blinking and sniffing at the sand and kind of scratching to feel their fur and get dry, I suppose. And you know, they almost as if they're realizing that they have flippers and things like that. You know, they're kind of rolling around with these big eyes.
The big eyes, eyes, they're killers, aren't they?
Mm. But of course, there are quite a few animals here just in the distance that we can see that have molted as well. Now, the shorter haired coat is molting through, so they're a few weeks old and they're going to be getting ready to go to sea fairly soon.
The mothers only feed them for about 3 weeks.
They're like little barrels at that point.
They are. I mean, if that beach was any steeper, he'd roll straight into the sea.
Yeah.
Wouldn't he?
Well, I've encountered them now on grass a few times where we'd be doing surveys and they'd be lying on their backs and they'd roll over and wouldn't quite have the coordination to stop. So they'd do a few rolls before they find that their flippers are there that stop them from doing it. So you're right. They really get quite barrel sized at that point. But that's it for them. That's the peak. They're never going to be that size again. You know, even when they're mature, they'll never be that big. They'll never have such fat reserves as the mother gives them. And they're on their own after that, and they turn back into the cigar-shaped, slender, more slender variety.
Because it's a strange thing. The mothers feed them this incredibly rich milk, milk with all this really extreme fat content, so they can grow extremely quickly. But after about 3 weeks of having this fabulous diet, the pups are then abandoned.
Yeah, yeah.
It's starvation that pushes them back into the sea.
It's probably hunger, yeah, that causes them to need to find food. Some of them will be quite adventurous and entrepreneurial even, and go into rock pools and into the shallows when the tide is in, and learn how to swim and pick up stones and even swallow stones and get a feel for it earlier on. Other ones will go right up onto the grass and stay weeks, 2 weeks or so up on the grass, away from any sign of the sea. But eventually, sooner or later, if they want to survive, that's where they have to go. That's where their food is. They can't eat grass like the geese, so they've got to go into the shallows and learn, and it's pretty tough on them. All right, mortality in the first year can be up to 40% of all the pups born.
Really? Yeah.
Because of the hardship of having to fend for themselves out there in the wild. The ones that do survive, it's been shown that they show up back at the breeding beaches where they were born themselves, and even within yards of their mothers, you know, and have their own pups within yards of where their mothers gave birth to them. So they do maybe get a chance to meet each other again at some point.
You know, the wind is picking up a bit here. Shall we just try and get someplace a little more sheltered?
Yes.
If we can get in a tiny bit closer, do you think?
Yeah, of course we can, yeah.
Okay, well, we're now, I'd say, about 150 yards from the main colony. And how many animals would you reckon are there? You have the binoculars.
Yeah.
Have a bit of a scan and see what you can see.
Okay.
But there seem to be quite a few pups.
I'd say there's about 40 pups or so between one end of the beach and the other. It's quite a broad expanse of shingle and sand. And then there are a mixture of pup stages. There's some white coat pups, and then there are some that are semi-molted, and there are others that are a little higher up that are fully molted. So
there's a little one there. Is that that looks like a tiny pup, only a day or two old, right beside its mother. See, just there at the far end?
Yeah, yeah, it is too. It's
That's a little bag of bones still.
It is. It's just, I mean, it's lying on its side, and it's almost an hourglass shape because there's absolutely nothing around the middle of the pup.
And then there's a fella just above him to the right. There's a little barrel. Look at them. You could only get that from overeating. When you see them on land, like, there's one moving across the rocks there, and they look fairly ungainly on land, but once they hit the water, it's like they become a different creature.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Just so well adapted. They're just such superb swimmers, and I guess those big eyes give them good vision.
Yeah, they have excellent vision underwater, and they also come equipped with a very sensitive set of whiskers.
Yes.
Between those two organs, really, they sensory organs, they can find fish, you know, under the sediment, you know, that when they make small movements, they can chase after flat fish under the sediment, and you know, so they're really well equipped, and they also have the reflective layer on the inside of the retina, the tapetum lucidum, which is a kind of helps to bounce light around in the eye, so even in low light conditions underwater, they're getting the maximum value out of whatever light there is going, and it helps them to find food. They're not, unlike, I suppose, what you think, they're a carnivore, and a lot of carnivores on land go chasing after prey. You know, animals like lions, for example, go around hunting down prey and chasing after it. But seals are different carnivores in that they tend to ambush prey more so than go chasing after it. And that might
more
be
more like tigers.
They're a bit more like leopards or tigers or something like that, and the ambushing type. So when they do go to sea, they tend to drop down and sit around, move really slowly. They don't waste much energy chasing around after prey, but they tend to go to places where prey are numerous. And then when they're there, then they'll shoot out and catch something. Some experienced mothers have phenomenal pups. You know, every time that they have a pup, it goes away 40 kilos. It's huge, you know.
Yeah.
But you can bet that somewhere on the shore or above high water mark, there are the carcasses of pups that haven't made it. It's not without cost this time of year. And, you know, you can imagine with the air temperature in October, November, and storms and beaches getting bashed around with waves, it's quite a fine line to get what you need to make it to your first year and not to make it at all.
Well, I think the fact that they have to really set off from this beach, as these ones will probably set off in the middle of November, and that they're totally by themselves, that they're going to be forced to go and hunt for themselves and fish for themselves, it's some thought in the middle of winter. So when we're sitting down having our Christmas dinner, these pups will only be a few weeks older and they're out there all by themselves, having to manage the winter storms. Absolutely. Feed themselves, it's some challenge.
And who knows where they're going to go. You know, some of these pups will go, you know, up as far as Scotland, maybe even further, you know. They tend to do that in the first year particularly. There's massive widespread dispersal, so they'll go in all directions. If you put little transmitters on them, you know, no two will go in the same direction. They just radiate out from here in all directions. And because of that, you do get, you know, pups that are weaned that have shown up. For example, when I was studying here for the PhD, I happened to be on the shore one day and looking at a molt colony, and a pup actually came up the shore next to me, and I just sat still, and it actually had a flipper tag on it, and it had come from the Monarch Isles in Scotland. And amazing. that's one of the fascinating things about these animals, are the distances they'll travel, you know.
And then how they find their way back.
And how they find their way back, yeah.
There are a couple of younger males, it seems like, which are swimming along in the waves at the bottom of the colony, and they're sort of tussling, little bit of play fighting going on. They're still a bit too young to have any chance of being fathers, I'd have thought, but they're certainly not going to try and tackle that big guy. That one male is definitely a lot bigger than all the rest.
The big ones would be up to sort of 300 kilos in weight in their prime, and maybe 7 feet long.
Big animal.
Bigger than me. A good bit bigger than me in both directions, and they're large and heavy fellas, and it takes quite a bit to work that weight over ground like this as well, you know, when it comes to fighting another male.
He's moving along, and there's a pup you can imagine him going straight over the pups.
Yeah, they
do. Does that happen?
It does happen, yeah, yeah.
He's the males, close to that one.
The males tend to be reasonably quiet and inactive until a competitor comes along, or until a female tries to escape without any interference from the male, and then
you see them,
they burst into action, and they really, I mean, it's actually quite ferocious to see it. It, you know, everything seems to be calm, and then suddenly it's boom, and they're out of the traps, and they're either chasing that female down to grab her, and they'll grab them quite violently with the teeth at the back of the neck. It's really quite stirring to see it in all its ferocity, because it is wild, you know, behaviour.
Every so often you can just hear that wonderful sound carrying on the wind. It's just the sound of the swell and a couple of distant oyster catchers. Real haunting sounds coming from the colony. We've just moved around the coast and we're coming down to another cove. Another little sheltered bay. We're just making our way in slowly through the boulders, trying to keep below the horizon. The wind's still in our faces, so they certainly won't smell us anyway. And that's normally what gives you away. Now, as we're trying to creep up on the colony, there's boulders strewn all over the ground, so we're trying to walk on the solid ones, because any of the loose ones, if they move, that noise could be enough to spook the colony. We really don't want to do that. Okay, now we've got to get down. It's time to get down on hands and knees, because we just want to keep below. It's a bit tough on the knees too. We want to keep below the skyline. Unfortunately, what we can see in the foreground here, there's a little dead seal, one that didn't make it.
This is a boulder beach, and just at the top there's an area, a patch of sand and stones, which is a bit more like where they like to have pups, and a bit more sheltered as well for the pups. And just in the kelp just at the top of the high water mark, there's the remains of a pup. Looks quite a young one, and normally would be it's in the early days, the early week or so of life that the pups really are most vulnerable.
Down in the water now, there's a couple. They look like, could they be younger males who are just patrolling? But they look to me to be a bit small to have much chance of being successful.
You'll have a mixture in the water. You'll have a mixture of males and females, and you will have younger males that are not in command of a beach, that are patrolling and trying to get a chance to mate. So they will come into these coves like this, and quite often the male's best place to be, the dominant male's best place to be, is in the water or close to the water, where they can actually chase them away underwater rather than have to drag themselves over rough terrain to do the fighting.
So the big guy's keeping an eye on them.
Yeah,
he's
exactly.
Turning around every so often.
The males do a kind of an interesting noise as well. They kind of make a rasping sound to warn others away. They kind of hunker themselves up and make themselves look big, and then they open their mouths and show all their teeth, and there's this bright pink mouth coming out of this black dark mass, you know, and they look quite crazy. And but they show off these teeth and they kind of go like this, like that. Now, I've never been close enough to smell the breath, but I bet it doesn't smell great. But they make this very loud kind of a rasping sound like that. So if you ever find yourself one-on-one in the mouth of a cave or something with a big male, you know what to do
noise.
Back to him. Do exactly that, you might have some chance.
Yeah,
but that's
yeah.
The initial engagement is showing the teeth. And then after that, if you know, the suitor decides that he fancies his chances, then it'll turn into blows after that.
And pretty aggressive.
Yeah.
Full-on aggression when they get down to it.
Yeah, yeah, they're very sharp teeth. You know, and they'll rip into each other, and that obviously is why they've evolved over time. They've evolved very thick necks in order to be able to take the biting, because it tends to be the throat area that the animals will go for.
And you see them quite
competing.
Scarred too, don't you?
You
they're
do,
often
yeah.
quite scarred, the
yeah.
dominant males, because I guess a dangerous time for them when they start to lose their dominance. They still think that they're the boss and they've been ousted out by the younger guys.
Yeah.
But they don't want to give up their place, because that's the one chance they have in their lives, maybe one or two seasons when they've a chance to be dads.
Actually, out of interest, just the nearest female to us, she's just orientating herself to feed the pup, and she was just doing a little bit of flipper waving. What she's trying to do there, she's trying to encourage the pup to go downwards towards her nipples and take milk. So she's reorientating herself. She's trying to make it as easy for the pup as possible, but she's occasionally flipping or waving her fore flipper, like patting, almost trying to pat the pup backwards to push it back towards the right area.
Oh yeah.
In fact, you can actually hear the pup calling out. It sounds almost like kind of a call.
So there are calls. Males will use calls to kind of proclaim their territory. Females,
they'll use a similar call, like a howling, like oh, kind of a call like that. And that's, you know, that'll carry for quite some distance as well. You'll hear that on the wind, you know, maybe a kilometre from a breeding colony.
Haunting sound.
Yeah,
haunting
on a calm day.
Now, there's one pup that's quite high up on the beach, but he's gradually sort of moving towards the water.
Actually, it may be taking its first steps into the unknown, really. It certainly doesn't look very inviting from our perspective.
It doesn't look too happy. It's looking a little bit side to side and thinking, do I really have to do this?
Yeah, there's dangers out there. You can see there's quite a swell rolling in from the Atlantic and washing in even to this cove, which is reasonably well sheltered, though it faces west. But as soon as that gets in the water with so much blubber, it hasn't adapted to diving, it hasn't learned how to dive, so that's going to be floating like a cork out there in that swell, and all it takes is one big surge or a big set of waves to wash it right back in among the boulders, and and you know, it can learn and get scarred fairly quickly from that experience. But they do have orca as predators, and orca do call
down. They're killer whales.
Yeah, and they do get seen around here, around Achill Island. I know a couple of people who've seen orca in and among the islands here. It tends to be in April, May, June, July that they're seen up around here. That's a fine raven there.
Ravens, yeah, I'm thinking there's that seal carcass.
Oh, they're clever birds.
Oh, yeah.
Something like a dead seal pup with some scavenging to be done. They wouldn't be far away. You'll also get blackback gulls associated with colonies, and they can be quite devastating. I've seen blackbacks, you know, pecking at the eyes of living pups and doing quite a bit of damage. Even though the pups are born relatively light, of course, they have a bit of, you know, flesh and bone on them, and so I'd say that's an important meal for a raven if it can find it. And so I'd say, well, that's part of nature, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. Now, I reckon that pup's actually going to go into the water.
Yeah, it looks like it, doesn't it? Yeah.
He is.
Yeah.
And there's a wave coming up.
Seems to be a bit of enthusiasm there.
Oh, that wave's going to get... It's got him. He's in.
Yeah, the head pops up straight away.
Oh, straight away, looking around. It's like he's thinking, what have I done? Just hard to imagine that not only does he have to be able to swim out through this bay and into the sea, but he's doing it all by himself. Mm. He's got to learn to hunt for himself, feed himself.
Mm. Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah,
that is amazing. I think that was the moment.
You see the way they lift their heads and then they put them under and they lift them and put them under again. It's like they're just discovering the underwater world for the first time and seeing it with their own eyes.
Must all look so different.
Yeah.
You know, just from this one vantage point, you see that one little pup, which hopefully has made it. At least he's gone through the season and he's been well fed and has a reasonable chance. But these ravens are reminding me that there's one little guy not too far from us that hasn't made it, but I guess he's going to be food for these guys, and I think maybe we should get out of their way, because I guess they need to eat too, don't they?
Yeah, true.